4. It's a well-known verse to practitioners of bhakti, and it's applicable to everyone, especially when Srila Prabhupada gives his commentary to help everyone understand what loving exchanges between devotees means. Dadati pratigrinati guyam akyati prichchati bhunkte bhojayate chaiva sadvidham pitti lakshanam. Translation. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad, and offering prasad are the six symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. Purport. In this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami explains how to perform devotional activities in the association of other devotees. There are six kinds of activities: giving charity to the devotees, accepting from the devotees whatever they may offer in return, opening one's mind to the devotees, inquiring from them about the confidential service of the Lord, honoring prasad, or spiritual food given by the devotees, and feeding the devotees with prasad. An experienced devotee explains, and an inexperienced devotee learns from him. This is guyam akyati prichchati. When a devotee distributes prasad, remnants of food offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in order to maintain our spirit of devotional service, we must accept this prasad as the Lord's grace received through the pure devotees. We should also invite pure devotees to our home, offer them prasad, and be prepared to please them in all respects. This is called bhunkte bhojayate chaiva. Even in ordinary social activities, these six types of dealings between two loving friends are absolutely necessary. For instance, when one businessman wishes to contact another businessman, he arranges a feast in a hotel, and over the feast openly expresses what he wishes to do. He then inquires from his friend, his business friend, how he should act, and sometimes presents are exchanged. Thus, whenever there is a dealing of priti, or love and intimate dealings, these six activities are executed. In the previous verse, Srila Rupa Goswami advised that one should renounce worldly association and keep company with devotees, sangha tyagat sato vritte. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been established to facilitate these six kinds of loving exchanges between devotees. This society was started single-handedly because people are coming forward and dealing with the give-and-take policy, the society is now expanding all over the world. We are glad that people are donating very liberally to the development of the society's activities, and people are also eagerly accepting whatever humble contribution we're giving them in the shape of books and magazines dealing strictly with the subject matter of Krishna consciousness. We sometimes hold Hare Krishna festivals and invite life members and friends to participate in the feasting by accepting prasad. Although most of our members come from the higher rungs of society, they nonetheless come and take whatever little prasad we are able to offer them. Sometimes the members and supporters inquire very confidentially about the methods of performing devotional service, and we try to explain this. In this way, our society is successfully spreading all over the world, and the intelligentsia of all countries is gradually appreciating our Krishna conscious activities. The life of the Krishna conscious society is nourished by these six types of loving exchange among the members. Therefore, people must be given the chance to associate with the devotees of ISKCON, because simply by reciprocating in the six ways mentioned above, an ordinary man can fully revive his dormant Krishna consciousness. There's more. I'll stop here for now. Maybe read more, but I'll try to explain a little bit about what we've read so far. Om Jnanat Timarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshuha Om Linitam Nina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Garim Yakripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gunandina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharane. This is an important verse for anyone who's interested to know how to live in the society of devotees. Srila Prabhupada explains that these six activities are symptoms of love. Actually, Rupa Goswami explains that. They're symptoms of love shared between one devotee and another. Love, of course, is, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes in many places, is not a cheap word. When we use the word love, it's not something that we can throw around loosely and expect it to be the full manifestation of the word when we say we love each other. The symptom of love that we know, as given by Rupa Goswami, is when we offer something with the intention of pleasing Krishna and without any expectation of something in return. That is the symptom of love, loving exchange. And certainly, it's important to understand, as we were speaking about this morning as well, that one very important aspect of offering to Krishna is offering to Krishna's devotees. And there are examples given in the scripture how the devotees render service to another devotee. Just like there's a story that comes to mind in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when there was an elder Brahmin and a young Brahmin who were on traveling, and the younger Brahmin was assisting the older Brahmin because it was difficult for him to... It was difficult for him to make the journey, undergoing a lot of hardships. And the younger Brahmin was assisting him in various ways and even said openly to him, "I am serving you because by serving you I'm serving Krishna." That was his mentality. "You are a respected elder Brahmana, and I see that my opportunity to serve Krishna is given to me by rendering service to you." And then, as the whole story goes on to describe, it's an interesting story, but I don't want to digress too much, although it's very interesting, that the senior elder Brahmin became so pleased by the service that was rendered to him that he wished to offer something in return. So he offered his daughter in marriage to the younger Brahmin. And he insisted that the Brahmin accept. The younger Brahmin said, "But you are from a very aristocratic family. And I'm not a very aristocratic Brahmin. And please take into consideration what you're doing by offering something in return to me in this way, that your family may object. And the elder Brahmin said, no, doesn't make any difference, whatever they say. But the younger Brahmin expected that there might be some objections from family members, and therefore he requested the elder Brahmin that, okay, if you're going to make this commitment, then why don't we go before the deity, and you make the commitment before the deity, and the deity will bear witness to the vow. Anyways, as the pastime goes on to explain, that just as the younger Brahmin anticipated, when they both returned to the home of the elder Brahmin, the family members objected, and one family member even threatened to take their own life if he were to give his daughter in marriage to this young Brahmin. And and he was also the younger son of the elder Brahmin. He was not very devotionally inclined. He was not much of a believer in the Supreme Lord. So then the younger Brahmin said, wait a minute, your father took a vow in front of the deity. If the deity bore witness, and if I bring the deity as a witness, will you accept then? So the younger Brahmin, the son of the older Brahmin, he thought it was preposterous that such a thing could take place. And he completely protested. Although he completely protested, he was pacified because he thought for sure no deity is going to bear witness. So this is the story of Sakshigopal, the witness, the deity who bore witness. The Brahmin went before the deity and explained to the deity that we made, this elder Brahmin made a vow to you in your presence, made a vow to me in your presence, and now we've come to you to ask you to bear witness to his vow, to protect his word. Because the younger Brahmin, it's not that he was so much interested in getting the daughter, he was more interested in protecting the word of the elder Brahmin. He was not motivated in any way to simply to somehow extract the daughter from the elder Brahmin. His motivation was to serve the Brahmin and to protect his word, because he understood that he's a great devotee, and the elder Brahmin, he was in a complete difficult situation when his family members were threatening to take their own lives if he were to give his daughter away. He didn't know what to do. And so in service to the elder Brahmin, he went before the deity. And he said, please come and bear witness. And then the deity said, what makes you think I can bear witness to this event? And the younger Brahmin said, well, if you can talk, you can walk. So please come and accompany me and bear witness. So the deity agreed, and then he walked. He made a condition. He said, I will walk behind you, but do not turn around once in the course. Just simply offer me rice during our journey and prepare it for me, but do not turn around. I will accept your offering, and I will continue to journey behind you. But as soon as you turn around, I will stop in that one place, and I will not continue. So the younger Brahmin, he continued. He went on the journey, and he also, the Gopal deity said, you will know I'm behind you by the sound of my ankle bells. So as long as he heard the sound of the ankle bells, he felt confident that Gopal deity was behind him, so he began his journey back to bring the deity as witness. But at some point in the journey, he couldn't hear the ankle bells, so he decided to turn around. And at that spot, the deity stood there, remained there, and didn't continue. Just stood as the deity. But it wasn't far from the village, And he immediately went and called everybody in the village and called the family of the elder Brahmin and explained to them, just see, because it was a very large deity. There was no way he could have carried this deity by himself. And the deity has come to bear witness. And in this way, the Brahmin's word was upheld, and Gopal deity bore witness to the words of the deity, and the son had to accept the arrangement to allow his sister to be married to this younger Brahmin. Point, but we don't want to get lost about the point, is that by serving a devotee and by giving something to a devotee, then that is described as, or by giving in charity, is described as a symptom of love. It's a loving exchange. And Srila Prabhupada explains that this type of loving exchange is what devotees do when they're together. And not only that, but he also explains that how the Krishna consciousness movement, and as we read this commentary, we understand that Srila Prabhupada, his perspective in presenting this commentary as the Nectar of Devotion was written and translated in, 1973 or 74? It was early 70s. I can't remember exactly which year. But it was when the movement was expanding in the way he described it. And how he was saying, we have started this movement single-handedly, and because we see that people are coming and accepting whatever little offerings we're making, they are reciprocating very generously and they're donating and to our society. But the point is not that the reciprocation is a requirement to fulfill the condition of love. Real reciprocation, that is, we understand, is also accepting the offering. That is, somebody is offering charity, offering prasadam, or offering their mind, and revealing their mind in confidence, it was described as one of the characteristics of love, then real reciprocation is when the person who's on the other end is actually very gratefully accepting the offering which is being made because it's being offered with love. Love is complete when the acceptance is there. Imagine offering something and saying, no, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. I don't want anything from you. Relationship is certainly not going to go very far. And it's not also that in order to complete the offering, or to complete the loving exchange, then one has to give something back in return. especially if something is offered to love. But it's natural when it's being offered in love to a devotee. Because a devotee is one who's satisfied in serving the Lord. And it's not that he needs, or it's not that he's expecting or wanting gifts from others. This is a symptom of a devotee. He doesn't place the criteria of the relationship as, we'll have a relationship as long as you give. That type of relationship is, Prahlad Maharaj describes that in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, as a mercantile relationship. And in fact, when Lord Nrsingadev offered Prahlad Maharaj out of affection and reciprocation, he wanted to give something, a benediction to Prahlad. Prahlad Maharaj said, I didn't serve you because I want something in return. I served you out of love. I'm not a merchant. I didn't come to give you something and with expecting that you'll give me something to turn in return to make the relationship complete. So, and he said, please don't tempt me. I was born in a demoniac family. And Therefore, don't tempt me and allure me by offering me some benediction in this way, because I could very easily become victim of such an allurement. So please just simply accept my service and my offering. Now, of course, in the relationship between the devotee and the Lord is a person. He also naturally wants to give something in return. And we oftentimes give the example that because a devotee is doing something for the Lord out of love, he's offering something out of love, he's giving unconditionally, he doesn't do it because he expects something in return. The only thing he wants is Krishna's pleasure. That's all. If Krishna is pleased, for the devotee, that is everything. He doesn't hanker anything. He finds his satisfaction only in Krishna's pleasure. That's the symptom of a devotee. Anya balasita sunyam gyana kamanya nabhatam. Anukulyena krishnano shilanam bhakti uttama. The symptom of love, when offered to the Lord, is when it's offered with the intent simply to please the Lord. And the satisfaction a devotee gets is when the Lord is pleased, when the Lord accepts. That's, for the devotee, that's complete, that's perfection. This is bhakti. These are the symptoms of bhakti. This is the symptoms of love. Why is a devotee not expect anything so in return? Because a devotee is so satisfied with the opportunity to serve the Lord that he doesn't need anything else. Doesn't want anything else. He doesn't have to enter into a relationship with a contractual relationship. I'll give as long as you give back to me. And Prahlad Maharaj explained that I'm not a merchant. I'm not serving you because I want something in return. But of course, the Lord, being a person, is very much inclined to give something in return. So, as described by our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentaries in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the Lord, he offers something in return to his devotee as a benediction, but the devotee will always say, I don't want anything except, please give you be my master and let me be your servant. Please let me serve you, that's all I ask. So it's the Lord can't give something back which will satisfy the devotee by giving him something material. Because the devotee doesn't want anything. Devotional service is a spiritual activity. It's the activity of the heart. It's the activity of the soul. It's the hankering of every living being to please somebody. It's a symptom of life. But that symptom of life in this world, in relationships of this world, is pervertedly reflected by giving something with the expectation of something. I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine. The relationship can go as long as these conditions are met. But that's not the devotee. So a devotee is satisfied simply when the Lord accepts. That's his pleasure. He gets the highest pleasure. It's a pleasure that cannot, incalculable. It cannot be compared to the pleasure of this world. Just as Tula Yama Lavina Pina Svagam Napunam Bhavam is explained in the Bhagavatam, the value of a moment's association with a devotee cannot be compared to elevation to heavenly planets, or to liberation from matter, or to worldly prosperity, which is ultimately meant for those who are meant for death. Value with a devotee, association with a devotee, is from a devotee who learn how to love Krishna by hearing from him and by accepting what he has to offer. You learn how to serve Krishna. It's incalculable what a devotee can give. He can give because he doesn't expect in return, because he's so satisfied. Because, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, the chatasman manushe shu kaschin mi priyakritama. Yaidam paramam guyam adbhakteshva bhajasati. He says, for one who explains this secret to others, then for him, devotional service is guaranteed. At the end, he comes back to me. There's no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. Krishna is so pleased. He says that he's so dear that, of course, Krishna wants to give something. But what does Krishna give? He can't give him material wealth. He can't give him power. He can't give him anything because the devotee's not interested, but he wants to please his devotee, so what does he give him? And therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the Lord still gives something in return for the loving service rendered by his devotee. But what does he give? He gives his heart. He gives his heart. When you have Krishna's heart, you have everything. That's love. To imagine, to captivate the heart of the Supreme Lord and give it. And Krishna gives his heart in such a way, and this whole pastime of how Krishna gives his heart is in the story of Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When Durvasa Muni offended a great devotee, Maharaj Ambarish, the Lord tried to punish him by invoking his Sudarshan Chakra and chased Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni went to Lord Brahma for protection. Lord Brahma says, I can't do anything to help you. Went to Lord Shiva, I can't do anything to help you. Then he went to Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu said, I can't do anything to help you. And then Durvasa says, what do you mean you can't do anything to help me? You invoked the Sudarshan Chakra. Certainly you must feel compassion when you see somebody suffering. You invoked. And the Supreme Lord said, no, I'm not independent. I'm completely under the control of my devotee. The devotee doesn't know anything but me, and I don't know anything but my devotee. Devotee is always in my heart. I'm always in the heart of my devotee. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that when Durvasa Muni approached the Supreme Lord Vishnu and said, please protect me. You must be able to feel compassion for me. And then the Lord said, no, I'm sorry, I don't have a heart. What do you mean you don't have a heart? He said, Maharaj Ambarish has it. I gave it to him. He has my heart. His love for me is so great, I gave him my heart. And you offended him. I can't protect you. You want my heart. You want my compassion. You've got to go back to the person who has my heart. I don't have it. It's not here. So he understood. That's the power of bhakti. That Ambarish Maharaj had the Supreme Lord's heart in his heart. And therefore, under those circumstances, he had the power also to forgive, and which he did, and he had the power to control the Lord with his love, who gave him what he had to offer in return, which would be the only thing that he could possibly offer to Maharaj Ambarish, which he would accept, because he was not interested in anything else. That is love. That is loving exchange that takes place between the devotee and the Lord. And these type of loving exchanges are meant to be experienced also between devotees, one devotee another, to give something and to accept when it's given out of love, to offer prasadam and to accept when it's offered out of love. And when somebody approaches to speak in confidence, then a devotee will hear, inquire confidentially, as he says, as Rupa Goswami says, and revealing one's mind in confidence. These are exchanges of love between one devotee and another, and they're done on this platform of not any expectation of return. And the wonderful experiences of love that devotees have. And Srila Prabhupada emphasized this point in his commentary as well. He said that when these loving exchanges are manifest between devotees, it's very attractive. Even Lord Chaitanya, when he came to distribute love of God, first he gathered in the association of his most intimate devotees, experienced those loving exchanges with his devotees, those persons who were completely devoted to him, and then took them along with himself out into the streets to show their loving exchanges. That's the Sankirtan movement. It's not simply to Sankirtan movement means to spread the glories of the Lord and to give the gift of Krishna consciousness, the gift of loving association with devotees, and reveal that so that others may become attracted also to such loving exchange, selfless exchanges, exchanges where devotees are so fully satisfied simply to have an opportunity to serve. That is all. And not expecting anything. These are Vaishnava relationships, and if one reads the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, one will read again and again the descriptions, narrations of these loving exchanges between the devotees. And it's not, it doesn't have to be something that's only a story to be read in books. That's unfortunately that sometimes a perception that, yes, these are elevated souls, they're the Lord's associates, and no, but their activities, our examples, are meant to teach others also how to live by these principles. And when one lives by these principles and aspires to cultivate relationships on this platform, one begins to experience the satisfaction that is only available to one who actually wholeheartedly embraces the principles of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, Prabhupada always gives the example that the proof of the pudding is in the tasting, that this devotional service is a mystery and remains a mystery for those who don't want to take, as Prabhupada would oftentimes say, take the lid off the jar of honey and to stick one's finger in it to taste it themselves. Yeah. So you can't relish honey by licking the outside of the bottle. You have to go inside. So therefore, Vaishnava relationships and loving relationships, they're available. We should all think, at least if we aspire for it, that I can contribute to it by at least cultivating that mentality of giving something without expectation in return, simply to please the Lord. By serving you, I am serving Krishna. This is how a devotee thinks. And he always aspires to associate with those persons and to reciprocate with those persons who inspire him to serve Krishna. Because ultimately, when everything is going to Krishna and offered to Krishna, then and only then can we actually feel satisfied in the execution of our devotional practices. So I'm going to stop here. I just wanted to share a little bit from Upadeshamrita, and I'd like to just end by sharing with, maybe some of you are aware, I thought I should tell you, for those who are aware, that I don't know if it was announced here or not. We announced it in Hartford, that's for sure, about the attempt to ban Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in Russia. And there was a court in Tomsk city in Siberia, and they put Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita on trial, declaring it to be an extremist. And the implications of banning Bhagavad Gita are, I mean, all of Prabhupada's books all quote Bhagavad Gita. Devotees get together and have discourses. They're always discussing and quoting Bhagavad Gita. The implications are very far-reaching if this court in Tomsk were to ban the Bhagavad Gita in all of Russia. That's what they were attempting to do. And the trial was had been postponed many times, but the last trial was set for December 19th, and then there was a campaign, a petition to get people to sign, to protest. And then it appears that there was a very big protest in India. And in fact, a few days ago, I can't remember which day it was, some members of the parliament were in a session of parliament, raised objection that Bhagavad Gita was being banned in Russia, and they wanted to put it on the floor for discussion immediately. One put, set all other business aside and let's get to the issues. This is a serious issue. And Parliament turned into a ruckus because the Speaker, or whoever it was, said, no, we can't deal with this. We have too many other pressing issues right now. If anybody wants to address this issue, then you should go speak to this member of Parliament over here who's concerned about it. And he tried to put it off. And as soon as he said that, people were jumping out of their seats. And so they had to close the Parliament. And for that day, I think for part of that day, and to reconvene later that afternoon. And when they reconvened, Bhagavad Gita ban was the topic of discussion. And it seems that a lot of people have spoken out, protested, in time for the December 29th, yesterday. No, 28th, today. Yes, 28th, excuse me. December 20th, today was the court date. And the case was dismissed. So... I thought I would share that good news with you. I just received it about 2 hours ago. Because, certainly for me, because I preach in Russia, the implications are very far-reaching. But it seems like that it's not going to come up again. Ambassador was speaking out. Ministers were speaking out. You can go online and every news, New York Times, everybody's carrying news about this Bhagavad Gita ban in Russia, and also showing the devotees' protest in Calcutta. It's finished. Hare Krishna. So for those of you who did send in your vote in petitions, thank you. The devotees right now are writing up letters of gratitude, expressing their gratitude for everyone who has helped in this endeavor. It was something that was very serious. The Russian government was actually trying to weasel their way out of it by saying it's not Bhagavad Gita that we're against, it's the commentary of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. But it didn't work. Didn't work.
One thing in addition is that one article said that in some bookstores it became most popular book.
Yes. Yeah. It's a fact. People wanted to buy it up in a lot of places. And also if you look on the internet, every article has a picture of Prabhupada's Macmillan Gita, practically. It's like you couldn't get better advertising. It's like... They had a strong case built up, if it went to court. You know, they had many quotations from the Bible that are quite extreme as well. But it didn't even get to that point. I guess the international pressure was sufficient to provide the desirable outcome. So... thank you. It's 7 o'clock. It's time for Artik. Hare Krishna.